Good afternoon. This is the European Data Warehouse, and I welcome you to our Education Part 1 webinar on the new ESMA templates, how to avoid the pitfalls of data preparation. My name is Christian Thun. I'm the CEO of the European Data Warehouse, and I have the great pleasure today to co-host this webinar with my colleague Gopala Sankaran, who heads up our IT and operations here in Frankfurt. The motivation for this series of education events was driven by numerous requests coming from our customers that were seeking guidance now that the disclosure RTS has been adopted by the European Commission and is currently under scrutiny by the European Parliament. Most likely, the ESMA templates will become into force in February 2020, so in roughly 4 months. We have received numerous requests in terms of with regards to guidance from a technical perspective, how to prepare the data in the right format. And we here at European Data Warehouse, as currently the only securitization repository in Europe, are more than glad to provide that guidance and to help our customers preparing the data in the right format and helping you to prepare yourselves for the new disclosure regime that will then come into force in February 2020, most likely. Before my colleague Gopala and I will begin with today's education, some housekeeping rules. Please keep your phones on mute. You're automatically set to mute, but in case you hear some background noise, please make sure that your phone is muted or let us know so we can remotely mute you from here. The session today will be recorded. We may make that recording available on our website for you to download at a later point and also to share with your colleagues or those who find this topic interesting. If you have a question, we're more than happy to answer them during today's webinar if the time allows. And if you can, please submit them in the chat box that you find on the right-hand side of your WebEx screen. Let me start by today's agenda. What is it that we try to do in this very first session or series of the education series? Number one, a very warm, briefly welcome introduction of who European Data Warehouse is, who we are, what we do. We want to talk about the new ESMA templates and the regulation behind it, when they will come into force, what is missing, what is will be in place. And most importantly, for those of you who have worked with European Data Warehouse utilizing the ECB templates, for those of you, it will be interesting to understand what is going to change from the existing loan level data regime of the European Central Bank and the Eurosystem to the new XML-driven regime by ESMA. My colleague Gopala Sankaran will then highlight the technical aspects of the new templates and do a deep dive into the XML technology and also show, I think, demonstrate on his computer some live examples. We also then give an outlook of what is still missing, so the known unknowns, and are here, of course, for your questions and answers that we can provide. Again, please note that we are the European Data Warehouse. We are not ESMA, so we cannot provide any guidance with regards to the content or individual questions regarding the disclosure of individual items. We want to focus here on the technical aspects of preparing the data in the right technical format, allowing you to prepare yourself to meet the regulatory disclosure requirements from early next year. Going to the next section, who we are, I think most of you know, the European Data Warehouse was founded in 2012 and started its operation in 2013 as the securitization repository of the Eurosystem as part of the European Central Bank's ABS Loan Level Initiative. We are funded by numerous market participants that you find at the bottom half of the screen, and we have a very clear governance structure in terms of our shareholder, our pricing structure, as well as the responsibilities that are shared among the supervisory board, myself, as well as the chairman, making sure that we can fulfill this role that was given to us as part of this market initiative for improved transparency, making sure that that investors or investors' confidence can be restored in European ABS. As part of this, we of course collect loan-level data in the ECB templates, and going forward, we strive to become the first securitization repository under the new securitization regulation. And of course, with this, we have prepared ourselves to provide the technical infrastructure for the ABS issuers and structured finance issuers in Europe to send the data to European data warehouse as they've done the last 5 years. The series of education, again, as I said, we tried to break it into numerous lessons here. And we have 5 lessons already scheduled for the 6th of November, which is today, on the 14th of November, the 28th, the 5th of December, and the 19th of December. In each single episode, we want to target a small dedicated problem and discuss this problem and be open to for your questions and answers to make sure that we provide most value to you, helping you to prepare yourselves for the new reporting regime. The new reporting regime that will come into force in probably February 2020 shows a deviation from the existing ECB reporting framework. We see a number of new templates for asset classes, and we have the underlying exposure templates for residential real estate, commercial real estate, corporates, automotive, consumer credit cards, leasing, but also esoteric, and an add-on for non-performing exposures and a dedicated underlying exposure template for ABCP transactions. For those of you that have used the ECB loan level reporting, they're familiar with 7 of these asset classes, where we had also RMBS, commercial real estate, corporates, they were called SMEs, automotive, consumer, credit cards, and leasing. But as you can see from this slide, the number of asset classes has been increased. On top of this, also a requirement to provide structured data for investor reports, as well as for inside information and significant events has been added as part of Article 7 of the securitization regulation. When will these new templates come into force? And why do we believe that these templates will come into force in February 2020? What is the regulatory timeline, the process that we currently have in front of us? As you know, the European Commission has adopted the RTS in mid-October, and is sharing this now with the European Parliament, where this will currently be scrutinized. The scrutiny period ends up probably in January 2020, when the results will be, the final guidelines will be, final RTS will be published in the official journal, and 20 days later, the disclosure regime will enter into force. That will be roughly in mid-February. At the same time, and we try to illustrate this here on this slide at the upper hand, of course, there is the repository RTS, which is still outstanding. This is currently has not yet been adopted by the European Commission. We're expecting this in the next couple of weeks. Once it has been adopted, also European Parliament will scrutinize it and endorse it, publish it in the official journal, and 20 days later, it will also come into force. Given that the European Parliament only requires a 1 month period of scrutiny for the repository RTS, we're expecting that roughly the same time both RTSs will come into force. Since the application process to become a repository will take up to 6 months, we're expecting that not before summer 2020, we as European Data Warehouse will become designated as a repository. What, of course, does this mean for you? For those of you who have issued securities in 2019 that fall under the securitization regulation that came into power into force in 2019, it means that you have to, in order to fulfill the requirements, the disclosure requirements of the securitization regulation, you have to disclose the underlying exposure templates in XML format, in the ESMA templates, but also still use the ECB templates for the ABS, for the collateral framework of the Euro system. So please keep this in mind for your 2019 and 2020 deals. We have tried to illustrate it with this green bar. There might be a period of dual reporting for those deals. What's going to happen after the fact, once the hopefully European data warehouse will be designated as a repository? The Euro system, the ECB, has published this in March and clearly laid out kind of for how long it will accept the legacy reporting standards, meaning the old ECB templates, and when also for those deals, only the ESMA templates will be accepted. This will be the case once the templates are out and a repository has been designated, so roughly this summer. There will be a 3 month transitional period for deals that have been issued in 2019 and later. And probably then from Q4 2020, only ESMA templates will be accepted. For all deals that are older than 2019, and we try to illustrate this at the lower half of the slide, there is a 3 year transitional period that starts once the first transitional period of 3 months is over. So this stretches into late 2023. Until then, the ECB templates will be phased out completely. So what's changing from the ECB templates? We published a gap analysis as early as 2018, and now it's kind of, we have also the third edition of it, but just the slide that summarizes the key differences. We have format changes. We go from CSV to XML. We have additional fields. We remove fields. Regulatory fields have been added. Risk-related fields have been added. Arrears information has been updated. Energy performance fields, as you probably know, have been added. The change in the structure of the files has been made. The no data regime has been changed. Static and dynamic fields have been altered. And also the usage of optional fields has been abandoned completely. Just to illustrate what this means in terms of the number of fields and how this, for example, how this means the transition for example, for residential mortgages, the next slide, or this slide, tries to illustrate this, where in the ECB template that was published in June 2013, was revised recently to meet GDPR requirements. But you can see here we have 55 mandatory fields and 102 optional fields. The new ESMA templates do no longer distinguish between mandatory and optional fields, but all of them are mandatory. And not all of the fields that you can see here, 35 of the 55 mandatory fields, you now find in the ESMA templates. 20 of the 102 optional fields made it into the ESMA templates, but 43 template fields are completely new. Those will represent a lot of challenges for banks that have not yet begun to look for this information. And these templates have been available since January 2019. So I can already encourage you to look into the data requirements, because probably, very likely, in Q1 2020, those ESMA templates will be mandatory reporting items for your deals that have been issued after 2019, after January 2019. If you look at across the different asset classes that we have, and we've done this here for the different ECB templates or asset classes, not just residential mortgages, you find here in this table at the lower half of the slide, but also for corporates, automotive, consumer leasing, or credit cards. And you see there is quite a number of fields that have been dropped, but also between 30 or 23 and 60 fields have been added. So that is quite some change that the new regime will actually kind of mean, and that of course means that not only there are formalistic changes with regards to the technical aspects, which we want to stress today and also in the next couple of lessons, but there are a lot of content changes of what needs to report. So again, I can only encourage you to take a closer look at these and also check the Q&A that was published by ESMA earlier this year if you seek further guidance on the content. That, as an introduction of what is the motivation for this series of webinars that European Data Warehouse is hosting in the next couple of weeks. But without further ado, since we talk about the technicalities, I'd like to hand over to my colleague Gopala Sankaran, who will walk us through the adjustments that need to be done and specifically address the issue of the new file format XML.
Thank you, Christian, and hello and good evening to everyone. A warm welcome to our education series part one. As a continuation to what Christian mentioned in terms of the gap analysis, I would like to directly, as a first step, delve into the technical gaps between the ECB template and the newly published ESMA templates. For instance, the ND values. The current ECB templates allows up to 7 ND options, whereas the ESMA template allows only ND 1 to 5. As you can already see here, the ECB template's format of ND has a comma, whereas on the ESMA side, it's just NT1 without the comma. There are also several file format changes. On the ECB regime, you are able to upload files in CSV and in XML. However, on the ESMA regime, the newly published XML templates from ESMA follow the ISO 20022 standard. We will go into that in a minute during the demo. Also, there are several field format changes. For example, any monetary field has now a standard representation in terms of the sign, the currency, and the amount. How loan IDs are represented have also changed. In the ECB template, there used to be only one identifier field per loan or collateral, whereas in the new templates, there are now an old identifier field and a new identifier field. The distinction between static and dynamic fields has also been removed. And in terms of data sections, especially the SME asset class has in the ECB template the loan, collateral, and bond section, whereas the number of data sections that you have to report in the ESMA templates has significantly increased. It's also here important to note that the fields that have increased, which we saw earlier, a couple of slides earlier, have to do only with the loan section. The data fields that you need to report as an issuer for investor reports and significant events are completely new. Let's look at the XML format as such. As I said earlier, the XML follows the ISO 20022 standard, and there are four item codes that are covered by the XML templates, which are item codes 1, 2, 11, and 12, which are the underlying exposures, the investor report, the inside information / significant event templates. It's also mandatory that issuers need to submit data in the prescribed XML format, adhering to the schema prescribed by ESMA. It is, however, unclear whether, as a securitization repository, we are allowed to offer a conversion service, for example, a CSV to XML converter, inbuilt into our repository platform. This would mean that you would be able to digitally sign and submit CSV files, giving over the responsibility of converting that CSV to XML to European Data Warehouse. However, it might also be the case that the XMLs need to be digitally signed by you, in which case we are happy to share a desktop version of a converter tool, which you can install it in your machines, prepare the CSV file, convert to XML, and then submit it to us. So which of these two options would pan out is we are awaiting clarification from ESMA. Once the XML is submitted to the securitization repository, they will be accepted only after they pass the schema check and also several other content checks prescribed by ESMA. If there is a schema failure, the whole file will have to be rejected. And whereas if there is a content failure, for example, for one or two specific loans, there is a wrong data in the date, which is an old date, older than 1900 or greater than 2050 and so on, only the loans that have erroneous data would be rejected, whereas the rest of the loans would be accepted. So these are two kinds of distinct checks that we would be making on the platform once we become a securitization repository. So what are the key challenges and things to know in terms of preparing the XML file? So of course, the XML file has to adhere to a specific schema, which is outlined by ESMA. It's also important to understand the various identifiers prescribed by ESMA, which are mainly the report ID and the unique ID. The report ID is a unique ID that is given to a specific file that you would be submitting to the repository. And if you were to perform any modification of a loan, if we detected an error in a few loans and you were to perform modifications of the loan, then the same report ID has to be used in a corrected file. Similarly, in the XML format, every data field has its own tag name or XML path. As you can see on the screenshot on the right side, the currency of 10 million here, for example, which is the primary income of the obligor. So here you have the primary obligor income tax, inside that a tag called VAL, and inside that another tag called AMT for amount, and then finally the amount and the currency with the actual value. If it's a negative, there is also a sign tag called SGN, and then you close the corresponding tags. So to represent a currency amount of 10 million, that's the XML structure that you would have to follow. Below the screenshot in blue, you see a single line which contains the same fields in the CSV format. So as you can see, the CSV format does not occupy too much storage space, whereas the same four data fields when converted to XML takes up approximately 10 to 15 times more storage space. So what this means for you as an issuer is, if under the ECB reporting regime you had a large credit card transaction or a large Master Trust Resi transaction with more than 500,000 loans, you would have been submitting a data file of, let's say, 1 gigabyte. The same file in XML, you would have to submit the file of size 10 to 15 gigabytes. So here, because of the structure of the XML, on one side, the advantage of XML is it gives a common schema to understand and exchange data, but at the same time, it heavily enlarges the storage space used by the files. Another key difference in the XML is the loan and collateral details are grouped under a master XML tag called the underlying exposure record. So in the ECB regime, you had submitted the loan section separately and the collateral section separately. However, in the XML, the whole package is termed as an underlying exposure record, and under that record there would be specific fields for the loan section and specific fields for the collateral section. The XML also differentiates between performing loan and non-performing loan. There are also specific notations to pass on, saying these loans are modifications or corrections and these loans need to be cancelled. So there are specific XML terminologies for each of these. With that, let me quickly show you a live example of an XML for both underlying exposures and for significant events. On the logistics, we have been receiving a number of questions. We will be answering those questions towards the end of the webinar. So what you see here is an XML file for an underlying exposure record. It's for non-ABCP residential underlying exposures. And here is the overall structure of the XML. So this begins with some standard XML definitions, what schema the XML follows, and so on. And here we have the new or correction tag. This denotes that you are submitting a new data file. And immediately on top, it has the unique report ID. The report ID is usually the unique ID of the securitization plus the pool cutoff date, wherein a report can always be submitted only for a specific pool cutoff date for a specific transaction at a time. If you were to submit for more transactions in one go, then there would have to be X number of reports. And inside that report, you specify which securitization ID the report is for, and then you have every loan as a specific underlying exposure record. So let me go ahead and expand one of these underlying exposure records. So inside that, you have first the common identifiers for the record, the underlying exposure identifier, the obligor identifier, the cutoff date. And then inside that, you have the actual data. So once you have the actual data, here you can see that it's a residential real estate loan and it's a performing loan. If it's a non-performing loan, here you would have the non-performing loan tag. And then here you have all the common data of the loan level data set. Let me go ahead and minimize this. And then you have the collateral data of the loan. So those are the two master tags under which you would split the loan data fields and the collateral data fields. For example, on the loan data fields, as you can see, in the white color font, you have all the data points, and then the blue are the XML tags. Let's take a simple example of the pool addition date and the reporting date. Although those two are two separate fields, under the XML schema, they are grouped under a common tag called activity details. Underneath it, you have the pool addition date and the report date. Similarly, you have several such groupings for several fields. You have yes or no fields represented as true or false or one or zero. And I already showed you an example of a monetary field, how a value of primary income of 10 million is reported here. So that's the structure of XML, which I wanted to briefly show you. As you can see here, there are also no data options. So for in this case, the reporting date has a value of ND4. And in order to represent ND4 followed by the date from which the reporting date is expected, that's how you present the no data option. There are some clarifications on the XML which we have already written to ESMA. For example, the schema dictates two different ways of representing the same ND4. Let's call the two ways A and B. So certain data fields have the type A, and certain other data fields have type B of representing ND. So we have written to ESMA saying, as a suggestion, why do not we align this and why not there be a single way of representing ND4? It is also possible for you, because you have the report ID to uniquely determine the securitization and the pool cutoff date, it is also possible, given the large expected XML file sizes, it is also possible for you to submit large pools of assets in chunks. Let's say you have a 1 million transaction, you can submit in 10 pieces of 100,000 each. So this is also possible, which was not possible under the previous ECB template regime. Similarly, let's quickly look at the investor report and significant event template. So the starting is the same. You have the report ID, you have a new submission or a correction, that's why you see this tag, you have the securitization ID, and then you have two master tags, one for the inside information or significant event and one for the investor report. So once you go into the investor report, you have the cutoff date, you have the reporting entity details, you have the risk retention details, and then you have the arrears performance information and so on and so forth. So the structure of the XML pretty much is the same. And when you look at the monetary representation of a specific amount of 10 million, that's exactly what the ISO 20022 standard is. So it has a specific way of denoting financial information. For example, the currency has to be in an attribute inside the tag, and the value has to be the actual value of the tag. So that's what is the ISO 20022 standard. So I hope with this bit of demo, you have like a high level overview of what it takes to prepare data in the XML format. However, although complex, I want to assure you that we have built a converter to convert our prescribed CSV formats into these XML. And we will be launching a version of this converter tool as a desktop utility in its beta phase by December. To begin with, we will have this for the RMB and auto asset classes, but going forward, we will also incorporate the other asset classes. With that, let me go back to the presentation. So we do have already a few issuers who have submitted data to us in CSV, and we have used the converter to convert these into XML. So there are quite a lot of issuers starting to prepare data to be ready for February or March, by which time frame all data for 2019 deals have to be reported in XML format. So what are some common mistakes? We did cover quite a few, but I still leave this slide for you to read. Just to reiterate, so ND values have changed. There are now 5 ND options without the comma. You have now multiple loan ID representations. The date fields are important. So for example, on the origination date or maturity date, on the ECB data templates, just having the year and month would suffice. But on the new ESMA template, you would have to put an actual date, including the date parameter. How about loan parts? So if a loan has more than one collateral, All those collaterals should be reported together with that loan as one underlying exposure record, as we saw in the demo. So what if there is one collateral backing more than one loan? In that case, the same collateral has to appear under both the loans that it's backing with information on a pro rata basis. But this information is already covered in ESMA's Q&A section. List values have also changed. So one common example is for account status for residential, we use the values 1, 2, 3, 4 for performing arrears, default, and redeemed. But in the new ESMA templates, any numerical list codes have been replaced with four-digit alphabetical codes. In this example, PERF for performing loan. So yes or no fields are no more represented with Y or M, whereas the schema mandates yes or no fields to be represented as a 1 or 0 or as a true or false. So that's a bit of an overview into how the issuers need to prepare data in XML format. However, please keep in mind you also have a converter that would be helpful for you. But if you have to work with your IT departments to directly prepare data in XML format, that's absolutely fine as well. So once you have this data prepared, where can you test this data? We do have a free sandbox environment, so you can register on the sandbox. It's called editor-sandbox@eurodw.eu. And on this sandbox environment, you can create any number of transactions. You can upload any number of test files. And this sandbox environment, we will keep updating it as per ESMA requirements on the fly. For example, we do expect some minor changes to the XML template. For instance, about the ND4 option alignment. So once ESMA makes these schema changes, we will strive hard to immediately make those changes on the sandbox, giving you enough time to amend your data and test the data. We would also be building several content checks exactly as per the regulatory requirements on the sandbox environment, so you have enough time to front run and test your data. With that, so before I hand over to Christian, a little bit on what could change, or rather the known unknowns. So as I already mentioned, the XML is subject to minor changes. For instance, you can submit huge files in parts, like 1 million loan files in parts of 100,000. So in this example, we have already sought clarification from ESMA saying there is no tag or any flag in the XML that indicates which is the first part and which is the last part, because as a repository, we would need to know which is the last part of the file in order to start processing, computing the data completeness score, and so on. So this information is missing. So we expect ESMA to add this information. So currently, if you see the XML structure, there are specific tags like new or correction or cancellation to inform the repository that this is a corrected data set. This loan record needs to be canceled. However, there is no clear guidance on how to make this data available to data users. So this is again another point where we are expecting clarification from ESMA. In terms of loan removal and modification procedures, ESMA has recently put out a reporting instructions document that clearly say how repositories need to modify loans, how issuers can submit specific loans, let's say only 10 out of 1,000 previously submitted loans as a correction, but it's still not clear for us from a repository point of view under which scenarios the repository needs to recompute the completeness score, recompute the content checks, and so on. According to the regulation, a securitization repository must also obtain written confirmation from issuers on the completeness of information that you have submitted. So the format of this written confirmation is also not known, whether it's an XML file or it's just an acknowledgement online or it's a signed document. So these things are not clear. However, these are only minor points. The overall structure of the XML will not change. There will be like a minor 1-2% change here and there in terms of additional flags. This is just for your information that the XMLs could possibly change in the future, but only to a very minor extent. So with that, let me open the floor for some Q&A. Please feel free to enter your questions in the chat box. And as soon as we wrap up the Q&A session, I would hand over back to Christian, who will then give an overview of what is coming up in the next parts of the education workshops. So there is a question on when will the content checks be available on the sandbox environment? That's actually a very good question. So currently we do not have them implemented yet, but we will slowly begin with content checks for residential loans. If you look at the reporting instructions file from ESMA for residential loans, I think there are about 10 to 20 content checks, and these are very basic checks. For example, check if the date is not a dummy date, like older than 1900 or greater than 2050. So these are not really data quality checks, but basic content checks that go just one step beyond data completeness. So these interfield checks are something that we will definitely build in the sandbox environment, and we expect to have a first version by end of December or by early January. We have one question on the converter tool. Although we plan to release the converter tool in its beta form by December, if you already have a CSV file that you want to have it converted to XML, please create a test deal on the sandbox environment and upload your CSV file there. And if you log on to Editor Sandbox, you see a What's New button. So under that button, you will find the email address called CSV to XML Converter at eurodw.eu, and simply send your etcode to this email address. Until the time we launch the converter, we will simply convert the file on our side and let you know and give you a link to download the converted XML file. Good. So as there are no further questions, let me hand over back to Christian.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Gopala. This is very insightful and very helpful, I think, kind of for everybody dialing in today to understand the challenges ahead. And that said, what we try as European Data Warehouse, as I said, we try to respond to the questions that we receive from our customers with regards to the technicalities on the new reporting regime. So we have a number of other events coming up in November as well as December, and you find them listed here. All of them will be at 4 o'clock in the afternoon Central European time. And today we wanted to highlight the key challenges or the key differences between the ECB templates, the existing regime, as well as the upcoming regime using the new ESMA templates. The next session, we will focus more on the, again, on XML and how to prepare the data in XML. Whereas in part three, the assumption is that you have prepared the data, you're ready to submit the information. What do you need to keep in mind when you create a deal? What information do you need to provide in addition to what, for example, you have done so far when you created a deal and submitted information to European Data Warehouse? And now the additional information that you need to submit by far exceed the information that you had to provide under the Eurosystem collateral framework. And what's going to happen actually kind of after you have uploaded the information? What will we do in terms of checking the data for consistency, checking the data for completeness, and how we're going to communicate back to you, and what options will you have going forward when you can replace individual loans from a submission or a previous submission? Whereas in the past, you had to cancel the entire submission of all, for example, 50,000 loans. Now you can remove, for example, 400 loans of those 50,000 and replace them with others. Those technicalities, those how-tos, we want to answer in the upcoming. And any remaining questions that we'll not be able to answer during those four first sessions, we will then hopefully be able to discuss in part number five, in the 19th of December, before we break for Christmas holidays. What I want to stress in these education series, again, our focus is to help with the technicalities, to help with it, to solve technical problems, to leverage the existing experience that we have been able to collect in the last 7 years, acting as a synchronization repository for the Eurus system, and share with you these lessons that we've learned, but also the findings that we already have seen in some of the test data, like Gopala has alluded to, for example, like a simple thing like a comma in the ND term, ND1, ND comma 1. We are not here, we're not in a position to give guidance on any form of content of how financial instruments have to be reported, but those are solely in the responsibility of ESMA, and I can encourage you to either refer to the Q&A documents that have been published by ESMA or contact ESMA directly under using the synchronization@esma.europe.eu email, reaching out to ESMA for further clarification and guidance. So our focus is on the technicalities. If you do have any further questions following this webinar, and as Gopala and I said, we're going to record this, and we will post it and make it available on our website for you to download and to kind of listen again. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to us, either by phone, as you can see here, or drop us an email on inquiries@uw.eu. We're more than happy to give you guidance and help you with any technical questions with regards to the preparation of the data to meet the new requirements of the new disclosure regime. So with that, thank you very much, Gopala, for kind of hosting this event with me. Thank you very much, everybody on the phone, who was interested in what we had to share, and we very much look forward to seeing you again on the 14th of November, where we'll discuss the preparation of the data in the right XML format in more detail. Thank you very much, and goodbye from Frankfurt.